Okay, so this morning is, November 10th, 2018, and we are in Numbers 32, the whole chapter of Numbers, and the Haftarah is Joshua 22:8 and following.
That's what they asked for.
Oh. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So, Lord, thank you for today, and thank you for being with us in our hurry and our weakness, and when times are just challenging, that you're with us and that you don't give up on us, and you have a purpose and a plan for us, and especially for everyone in this world, especially for people who don't know you. And let us hear from you, and let us become more like you. Amen. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, so let's start with Numbers 32.
Now the Reubenites and the Gadites possessed a very large number of cattle, and they saw that the lands of Jezer and Gilead were ideal for cattle. The Gadites and the Reubenites came and addressed Moses, Eleazar the priest, and the leaders of the community, and said, Acheroth, Iman, Jezer, Mirah, Eshbon, Eliezer, Sebam, Nebo, and Baon. The land that the Lord subdued before the community of Israel is ideal for cattle, and your servants have cattle. So they said, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants for our inheritance. Do not have us cross the Jordan River. Moses responds. Moses said to the Gadites and the Reubenites,
sorry about this.
Must your brothers go to war while you remain here? Why do you frustrate the intent of the Israelites to cross over into the land which the Lord has given them? Your fathers did the same thing when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. When they went up to the Eshcol Valley and saw the land, they frustrated the intent of the Israelites so that they did not enter the land the Lord had given them. So the anger of the Lord was kindled that day, and he swore. Because they had not followed me wholeheartedly, not one of them, 20 years old and upward, who came from Egypt, will see the land that I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Except Caleb, son of Jephunneh, Kenizzite, and Joshua, son of Nun, for they followed the Lord wholeheartedly. So the Lord's anger was kindled against the Israelites, and he made them wander in the wilderness for 40 years, until that generation that had done good for food before the Lord was punished.
This version is so different. I'm going to go back to here.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's all right.
14.
I might offer a different interpretation.
So, yeah. Numbers 33, right?
32.
32:14.
Sorry.
Just one moment. Now look, you, the tribes of Reuben and Gad, have risen up in your father's place, a brood of sinful man, to add still more to the fierce anger of the Lord against Israel. Am I correct? Am I in the right place?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
For if you turn back from following him completely, he will once again leave them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all these people. But the people of Reuben and Gad approached Moses and said, we will build sheepfolds here for our flocks and walled cities for our children, but we will be armed and ready to go to war before the other tribes of the hills. We have brought them to their place while our children live in fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return to our homes until every one of the other sons of Israel has taken possession of his inheritance. For we will not inherit with them on the west side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has come to us on this side of the Jordan River towards the east. Moses replied, if you will do as you say, if you will arm yourself before the Lord for war, and every armed man of yours will cross the Jordan before the Lord until he has driven out his enemies before him, and the land west of the Jordan is subdued before the Lord. Then afterward you shall return and be blameless in this matter before the Lord and before Israel. And this land east of the Jordan shall be yours as a possession before the Lord. But if you do not do this, behold, you will have sinned against the Lord, and be sure that your sin will find you out. Do you have seen that quoted so often, you know, on billboards? Your sin shall find you out. Build yourself cities for your children, folds for your sheep, and do that of which you have spoken. Then the descendants of Gad and of Reuben said to Moses, your servants will do just as my Lord commands. Our children, our wives, our livestock, and all our cattle shall be there in the cities of Gilead. But your servants will cross over every man armed for war before the Lord to the battle, just as my Lord says. So Moses gave the command concerning them to Eleazar the priest and to Joshua the son of Nun and to the leaders of the fathers' households of the tribes of the Israelites. Moses said to them, if the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben will cross over the Jordan with you, every man armed for battle before the Lord, and the land is subdued before you, then you shall give them the land of Gilead, east of the Jordan River, as a possession. But if they will not cross over with you armed, they shall have possession among you in the land of Canaan, and surrender their right to their land east of the Jordan River. The sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben answered, as the Lord has said to your servants, so will we do. We will cross over armed before the Lord into the land of Canaan, so that the possession of our inheritance on the east side of the Jordan may be ours. So Moses gave to them the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben, and to the half-tribe of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, the kingdom of Sihon, the king of Amorite, and the kingdom of Og, the king of Bashan, the land with its cities and territories, the cities of the surrounding land. The sons of Gad built Dibon, Ataroth, Aroer, Athoth, Shophar, Japhazer, Jorveha, Beth Nimra, and Beth Haran, fortified walled cities and sheepfolds of sheep. The sons of Reuben built Heshbon, Eleale, Kiriathaim, Nebo, Baal Meon, their names being changed, and Sibma, and they gave other names to the cities which they built. The sons of Machir, the sons of Manasseh, went to Gilead and took it and drove out the Amorites who were in it. So Moses gave Gilead to the tribe of Machir, the son of Manasseh, and they settled in it. The sons of Jair, son of Manasseh, went and took its town, tent villages, and called them Havoth Jair. Noba went and took Kenath and its villages and called it Noba after his own name.
All right. So,
then after they capture the cities, then they leave them to their wives and children and cross over to fight on the other side, and then who holds the cities?
Right.
It's strange.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's like risk. Yeah, if you leave one little soldier there, someone could come in and wipe it out again.
But I mean, how could you build a city that fast? I mean,
maybe they moved into cities they didn't destroy.
Yeah, maybe. It's interesting. So, geographically, just to get oriented here, we're on this side of the Jordan. Of this
Steep?
Steep. It's a very steep incline right in this area here. And so there's a place in this area called Jabash Gilead.
Gilead.
Yeah. Jabash. Right, in English. And you'll remember the story of Saul, where the Philistines killed Saul, or Saul killed himself. He was fighting here in Gilboa. And what did the Philistines do with Saul's and Jonathan's bodies?
Took it to Beit She'an.
Yeah, they took it from the walls. And they hung them from the walls.
They impaled their heads.
Oh, yeah. And then what did it say? That what happened?
The people of Yabesh Gilad came, snuck down, and took them upon the walls.
Yeah, so Yabesh Gilad is right around here on the east side. So this is still, you know, people from, I guess, Manashe descendants that are living here, and they go and they take the bodies, and what do they do?
Burn them,
no? Yeah, they burn them, and then they bury their bones back here in Yabesh Gilad. But then later on it says that David and his men bring up their bones and take them back to Saul's birth area, bury them out there. But anyways, so Manasseh's up here, and you've got Gad and Reuben.
Right, half of Manasseh.
Right. So half of Manasseh's here, and half of Manasseh's here.
It's interesting, the Bashan, where's Bashan? The giants were out there, weren't they? Because Og was a giant. He was a king, but he was
King.
9 foot tall or something.
Isn't all of this Bashan?
Bashan is next to the Golan.
North of Gilead. Nowhere.
Well,
it's kind of including that region. Here. You can look at it.
It's weird because in the Bible you have Golan mentioned and Bashan. But you get Bashan more often, and then nowadays you get Golan more often.
It's basically in this area.
Oh, did he get that to
me?
Yeah, we passed it over.
Yeah.
It seems to be in that.
It's very, it's pretty. Is it small or big, Bashan? Is it all of that or just part of it?
I think it's all of it. I don't know if the borders are so exact.
Right.
So the east side there.
Right.
All of
this. Apparently, all the spices and the things that was brought into Egypt came from that area. The mummified.
Is there no bomb in Gilad?
That's right. It's so interesting.
So what do we learn in the first verse that we just read of those 42 verses, which quite a long section today?
They repeat themselves a lot.
No, the first verse. What do we learn in the first verse?
What was the first verse we started with?
Numbers 32.
Oh, there you go. Then you can't have had a little wind, and large-sized old flocks.
Who did? Okay, so Reuben and Gad have large flocks. Or livestock.
So it includes cattle and sheep and goats.
Right. Or and it could even just include any type of livestock. Just,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like camels or
small ones.
I was just looking around and it's donkeys, it's lots of things.
Yeah.
So where did they get all this from, this livestock? Okay, yeah, right, exactly. This is the joke. If you look at Numbers 31, what happened in Numbers 31? We just did last Shabbat. They plundered who? The Midianites. The Midianites. It says they took their livestock as one of the things they took. And we also know when they left Egypt back in Exodus 12, it says they also took a lot of livestock from Egypt as well. The livestock kept producing. Well, I mean, they ate manna, right? They ate manna and quail.
Do you think the livestock ate manna?
Oh, you're saying what did the livestock
eat,
right?
What else?
They talk about having nothing else.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's why all 40 years maybe they didn't have so much livestock, and then at the end they conquer it.
They plundered.
Yeah, so I don't think they took that much of it.
Jethro's people? Ah, right.
We
talked about this.
We've been raising these for years, and so this is better managed for us.
Right.
Like we have most of the livestock. Why do they have most of the livestock?
Well, little Ben is firstborn, so maybe he gets a little portion when they go from the room.
So I'm not sure why these two tribes have a lot of livestock. Also notice it doesn't say Manasseh. It doesn't mention Manasseh here. It only mentions Manasseh at the end. He kind of pops in at the end for half his tribe. But anyways, the focus is God and Reuben at the beginning. We know they have a lot of livestock, and we know that they want to stay on this east side. And what do we know about Canaan, not on the west side of the Jordan? We know in the story of, Genesis 36, 6 and 7, Esau and Jacob come together, and they all have a lot of livestock, and it says the land cannot support all their livestock. Mm-hmm. So Esau goes off. So it seems to be saying there's better grazing on the other side of the Jordan up there than there is on the west side. Mm-hmm. And
like in Amos, he compares the northern women to Pavot HaLashan, the cows of Bashan.
Right.
So
they're fat.
They're fat. They're the good cows, the ones grown in the Bashan area.
Right.
So this sense of it's a great country for cows.
Yeah, and even today you go up into
the
Golan area, there's tons of cows and pretty good steak restaurants too.
Yeah.
So.
And compared to Judah, you can't support cows in Judah because it's just not as much good grass area. Like goats can nibble here and there, but cows really need big green
territory.
Okay, so let's keep this in mind. We just read Numbers 32. They want to stay there, but Moses says, you know, what do you think you're doing? Right, this is a bad thing. Because now you're not entering the promised land. You're not.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, huh? You're not technically in Canaan yet.
Right.
It's
and
like the ridge, like the Jordan seems to be the divider.
And yet, if you go to Deuteronomy.
It is.
Go to Deuteronomy 1. There seems to be a debate inside the Bible. Moshe Weinfeld pointed this out. Like, go to verse. Let's see. I think it's like 12. Or 7. Maybe 8.
What are we doing? Okay,
Deuteronomy 1:7. Get up now, resume your journey, heading for the Amorite hill country to all its areas, including the arid country, the highlands, the Shelah, the Negev, and the coastal plain, all of Canaan and Lebanon, as far as the great river, that is the Euphrates. Look, I have already given the land to you. Go occupy the territory the Lord promised to give to your ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
But you notice there, it says, and the Lebanon as far as the Great River Euphrates. So if you follow from Lebanon east, the Euphrates curves up there. You know, so really you're talking about still a narrow portion. You're not talking about down the south of Judah going all the way to Iraq.
Oh.
You know?
Right.
It's in the north. It curves up like where Turkey is today. There's a little bit. It basically seems Canaan is going all the way up the coast into Lebanon until the
all this part is east.
Yeah.
It's northeast, actually.
Yeah, it's northeast.
If you go to Deuteronomy 11, Moses is talking here in Deuteronomy 11 about the Lord's going to drive out all the nations ahead of you, And then 11:24 says, every place you set your foot will be yours. Your border will extend from the desert to Lebanon and from the river that is Euphrates as far as the Mediterranean. Nobody will be able to resist you. The Lord your God will spread fear and terror over the whole land. So Deuteronomy has a bigger perspective of what the promised land is.
And Solomon also, when they talk about going to the Golan Heights,
right,
that's considered the Golden Age or whatever.
Right.
That's way up north.
Syria.
So that would be closer to the Euphrates River.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting though, because Abraham, right?
He was up there.
Abraham is originally from Haran, which is Euphrates River, just one tributary over from like. But it's interesting because he's called to leave his homeland.
Mm.
And yet the description of Canaan almost kisses his homeland. So it goes into in Lebanon.
Mm. Right, so.
Yeah, he's west of Euphrates and he's not yet in the promised land.
So.
Yeah, right. Or is he? But he had to travel so far south, but really there's no good borders next door. Yeah, kind of. Exactly, yeah.
So how would you sum up Numbers 32? What we just read?
Maybe.
They're trying to enter the land. The two tribes say we want to stay here.
Kind of explaining how the two and a half tribes stayed where they were.
Right. And then Moses and says, okay, you can do this as long as you come fight. And it's till the war is over.
Right. It's a big contract.
And that's kind
you
of it.
You have to do
yep.
this war, and you can come do this war.
Yeah. So let's go to Joshua 1. Joshua 1. So Moses dies. Where does he die? He dies on the east side of the river, right? So, because he can't go into the land. And then who's going to take the people in? Joshua. So God's telling Joshua, get ready. At verse 4, Joshua 1:4, your territory will extend from the wilderness in the south to Lebanon in the north. It will extend all the way to the great river Euphrates in the east. Yeah, here we go again. Including all of Syria.
Well, once you go way up north and then go east. That's how it's saying east.
Okay.
Or in the Hebrew, including all the land of the Hittites. And all,
yeah, that is the land of Hittites up there.
And all the way to the Mediterranean. No one will be able to resist you. Be strong and courageous or brave.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, we always think of be strong and courageous or, you know, chazak ve'emat. Right, be a man. But if you read the context there in verse 7, what's he actually saying Joshua is supposed to do to be strong and courageous is to do what?
Obey the law.
Obey the law.
Wow.
And if you read throughout Joshua, it's often connected to that, obey God.
That's good.
That's what strong and courageous is. It's
wow.
not kind of like this.
It's
like
the
it's not the mind. Yeah. It's not the adrenaline of. It's will you obey?
That's good.
It does take
strength and
courage.
Sure.
Yeah, it does.
But
it means fighting people that are more powerful than you.
Yeah.
You know,
in your own life, just modern day, you have to be strong and courageous sometimes to stand up to what you know the Bible says.
Sure. I'm just saying, I guess I'm trying to emphasize it's more of a discipline.
Yeah.
Strong and courageous is the discipline of, okay, I've committed or I'm going to do this and I'm going to follow through.
That's great.
And if you scroll down, you know, it goes through the whole thing about don't let the law go from your lips, blah, blah, blah. And then in verse 10, he instructed the leaders of the people and basically, let's get ready to go fight. And then we come to verse 12, 1:12. Joshua told the Reubenites, the Gadites, and half the tribe of Manasseh, remember what Moses, the Lord's servant, commanded you? The Lord your God has given you a place to settle and is handing this land over to you. Your wives, children, and cattle may stay in the land that Moses assigned to you east of the Jordan, but all of the warriors must cross over armed for battle. You must help them. And, you know, the exact same thing of what we just read in Numbers 32, the contract.
Until the Lord.
Sorry?
They had to
until the Lord your brothers the same.
Verse 16, we will do everything you say, Joshua. We'll go wherever you send us. Just as we obeyed Moses, so we will obey you. May the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Any man who rebels against what you say and does not obey all your commands will be executed. But, and there it is, be strong and brave. Chazak ve'amatz.
So what happened to the people, you know, when Jesus crosses over with his disciples and he meets the demon-possessed man and stuff like that? All the peoples there are no longer Jewish people in that area. So it's great.
Well, there were certainly cities in that area that were just completely pagan.
But there's still Jewish people on the other side?
There were.
Well, what happened is this. Go to 1 Chronicles 5.
The Assyrians?
Yeah, Assyrians.
Assyrians, Ashur, yeah.
1 Chronicles 5, what happened? The sons of Reuben, right, it goes into basically what, he was the firstborn, but he defiled his father's bed. His rights as firstborn were given to the sons of Joseph, Israel's son. So Reuben is not listed as firstborn in the genealogical records. 1 Chronicles 5:2. Though Judah was the strongest among his brothers, and a leader descended from him, the right of the firstborn belonged to Joseph. This is very interesting. We need to read Chronicles more. Verse 3. And then it goes into the sons of Reuben and his descendants. And then it says, come down to verse 9. In the east they settled, as far as the entrance to the desert that stretches to the Euphrates River, for their cattle had increased in numbers in the land of Gilead. So this is the same phrase that's used back in Numbers 32 about, I think it's Mikne Rav. Mm-hmm. And so they have a lot of cattle, or livestock, mm-hmm. or however you want to interpret that. And then it then starts to talk about next. God. Okay, hold on. Yeah, well, verse 11, the descendants of God, right? They're right next to him. So you got Manasseh, Reuben, and you got God. God is living near the land of Bashan.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt. Can you tell me?
1 Chronicles 5.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now we're in 11.
It's weird. In verse 16, they lived in the Gilead, in Bashan, in the surrounding settlements, and in the pasture lands of Shaul.
Yeah.
Where does that pop in there? Because Shaul's near the beach, the Mediterranean. How did they all of a sudden pop over there? Is that what happened?
They took a vacation.
Look at the map. I guess we're talking about God here.
Let's see. What are we talking about?
They were spread as far as.
Yeah, it's God. Verse 16. The God that's lived in Gilead and Bashan and Galilee and on the pasture lands of Sharon as far as they extend.
So, you go read what's his name for that one, Sharon.
Who? Anson.
Anson Rainey. But look at verse 18. The Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh had 44,760 men in their combined armies, warriors who carried shields and swords and were equipped with bows, and they were trained for war. So it's interesting because this all kind of goes back to Numbers 32 and then in Joshua, where we want your fighting men to be ready to come over.
Yeah.
It's like they're like a proxy army. A militia that could be called up and is here in the future that there are still.
So this is being trained for war.
Right. And so, and then finally, just going back to your original question, like in the time of Jesus, if you go down to verse 26. So the God of Israel stirred up King Pul of Assyria, which is TP3,
yeah.
Tiglath-Pileser III. He's
his nickname is Poul.
Right, but TP3 is a good way to remember.
That's a French word.
He's one of the most famous Assyrian kings of all time.
Yeah.
And
or infamous, depending on the side of the coin.
Yes. But he's the one who carried away the Reubenites, the Gadites, and half the tribe of Manasseh, and took them to Hala, Habor, Hara, and the river of Gozan, basically what you'd call northern Iraq today.
Okay, so that's what happened.
Where they remain to this very day.
Okay.
So.
Was that at the same time the rest of Samaria went? Or is this a
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
This is
yeah.
Yeah.
Right. The 10 tribes, the 10 lost tribes everybody talks about. So here's 2.5 of the tribes.
The Assyrians had a policy of taking their captives and mixing them around so that they wouldn't maintain their identities to then have a upheaval.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure that they weren't taken separately.
Yeah.
They moved them all over.
So then what happened is, if you follow the history, after the return from the Babylonian exile, which comes later, you start to see that there's been other peoples that have been settled in the land and who worship other gods and
naturally settled by
the Assyrians.
Assyria captured, they would see us from around. So they would be resettled here.
So anyways, coming back to our Joshua text, right, in 1, we read that basically they're going in to go do war, to fight inside of Canaan until it's, conquered or whatever. So now we come to our Haftarah. Our Haftarah is Joshua 22.
It's just so interesting how it seems like this whole thing was a provision.
Yeah.
It wasn't the promised land.
But it was a nice provision.
It's a nice provision, but what I'm saying is, like, when Abraham was like, go look and walk around and everything, he goes north-south on the axis on this side of the River Jordan. He never goes into the other side.
No.
That's not the promised land.
Well, it is a problem. It's bigger, but this is the real, the crossing over, this is really where it happens.
What I'm saying is, when Abraham is given the promise, the borders described are long and skinny.
Are bigger.
They go much further north, but they don't actually go that way so much.
Though they do mention the Euphrates, though.
Yeah,
I know that's up here.
I mean, way past Lebanon into Turkey, basically.
Deuteronomy's interpretation, which we just read, was wherever your foot steps on, it's your land. So, yeah, it's.
But it specifically says when they were marching through, like, you're not allowed to take the land from and Moab. So their foot went through there, but that was not considered their territory.
I'm just saying it's.
And then you get to Ammon, and all of a sudden.
The Amorites.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Midianites. So, Joshua 22. And even though... Joshua 22 is where we end. Even though here it's verse 8, I want to start in verse 1 so we have the context. But verse 8 is the key to today. And verse 1, what we read in Numbers 32, is the connection between those two verses. I'm going to read it here. Then Joshua summoned the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, and he told them, "You've carried out all the instructions of Moses, the Lord's servant, and you have obeyed all I have told you. You have not abandoned your fellow Israelites this entire time, right up to this very day. You have completed the task given you by the Lord your God. Now, the Lord your God has made your fellow Israelites secure, just as he promised them. So now you may turn around and go to your homes in your own land, which Moses, the Lord's servant, assigned to you east of the Jordan." Yeah, so it's interesting. Somebody else has pointed out, in Canaan, the allotment of land per tribe is laid out by God. But here, on the east side, God didn't lay anything out. And here it's basically saying Moses has done it. So that's an interesting difference between
sign to you versus agree.
Right.
I mean, again, like it's like a concession.
Right. Right. But carefully obey the commands and instructions Moses, the Lord's servant, gave you. Love the Lord your God. So here we're thinking about the Shema that we have in Deuteronomy 6. Love the Lord your God and follow all his instructions, or walk in all his ways and guard his mitzvot, you know, his commands. Be loyal to him and serve him with all your heart and being. Yeah, so that's very much, that's exactly from the Shema there, from Deuteronomy 6.
Like they're going to be out of touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And you notice in verse 9.
Well, we haven't got there yet.
Oh, okay.
Joshua rewarded them and sent them on their way. Or he blessed them, and they returned to their homes. Now to one half tribe of Manasseh, Moses had assigned land in Bashan, and to the other half, Joshua had assigned land on the west side of the Jordan with their fellow Israelites. When Joshua sent them home, he blessed them, or he rewarded them. Then here's the verse, saying, take home great wealth and what?
Large,
a lot of cattle or livestock. Silver, gold, bronze, iron, and a lot of clothing. Divide up the goods captured from your enemies with your brothers. So there's our connection, right? It's mikne, which we have in both. This idea of livestock and grazing things, cattle or goats and sheep, whatever, that connects Numbers 32 and Joshua 22, because this was the whole reason why they wanted to stay on that side of the river. It was because of the livestock, right? That's what they said back in Numbers 32. Yeah, and so this is it. So verse 9, Sharon, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, it contrasts, when they leave Shiloh, it says, Shiloh was in
the land of Canaan.
Land of Canaan.
Yeah.
And they're leaving that to go back to their land. So it's basically saying, Menashe and God, all these places, is not considered the land of Canaan.
Court, right, totally, yeah.
It's on the other side.
That's right.
So it's like they've been given a concession to live outside of the promised land.
Right.
And that's okay, kind of thing.
What do you call it? A priest?
I wonder if it was really okay.
Where's the market this time?
With Lot?
Yeah.
It's kind of like north and south. Yeah.
Yeah. So Abraham tells Lot, if you go south, I'll go north. And if you know you go north, I'll go south. So again, he's still looking at the land like a north south thing.
Yeah.
And then Lot looks out and sees this whole Jordan Valley that, like in the description there, it doesn't seem like it's even part of Canaan proper. But he likes it there, and this is before the destruction, so he goes there instead.
The other thing is, he's standing here and saying, right and left, and we refer to the land, and refer to it as a wide land. And from that perspective, it's wide.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of our north south,
which
is
wide.
Because
people are oriented to the Orient.
So,
and especially if you're taking Abraham's promise that goes all the way up to the Lebanon to the river, like you have a very long, skinny land like
that.
I'd like to know the earthquake.
That's right here.
See how far up, all the way to Turkey.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Syrian fault. So let's bring this all together here. Verse 10, the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh came to Gelilot, and they built, what they build there?
An altar.
What kind of altar? Gadol le Mar'eh.
It's
a shame of an
altar.
Well, it's like an impressive altar, or it's a great altar that, you know, its appearance is great,
monumental.
And so I won't read the rest of this chapter here, but to summarize, what happens is word gets back to the Israelites, and specifically Pinchas. Remember, he's the guy who killed the Midianite woman and the son of he's a Simeonite. And word gets back to him, and he brings, I think, let's say 10 elders, and they come over to have a meeting with the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. It's interesting. It says 10 leaders for one for each of the Israelite tribes. Mm-hmm. So I guess that means
the Manasseh was counted on.
Yeah, they're still a kosher Manasseh,
a
Western Manasseh.
Yeah.
So they still have a leader.
Whereas Gad and Reuven are just outside.
So why are they all coming to have this meeting?
So you have the 10 tribes sending 10 leaders to meet with these 3 leaders.
To make it official? To make it to
no, we, they're going to go to war. They're going to go to war with them, it says.
Because they built the altar.
Because they built the altar. Why? What's the problem with them building this altar?
Okay, they're separating themselves from the tabernacle. And
yeah.
They're doing their own thing.
So basically they think they're doing their own thing, right? And they... Because this kind of goes back to what Sheila was saying earlier. Their response is, no, you know, we would never do anything like that. We built this altar. Why do we build this altar?
It's a memorial.
It's a memorial of why?
So that would be a reminder that we're still part of you. We still serve God. It's not that we're going to go worship here separate, but it's going to remind us of our connection.
And even on top of that, it says it's going, they want to remind the other 10 tribes that we're still brothers.
Right.
So years down the road, when people start to forget how, mm-hmm. you know, because
they start getting mixed in as Jordanians on the other side.
Yeah, how these people are related to us, or cousins or whatever we are, that here is something to remind the future generations of the connection. And
have found that at all?
Not that I know of. So I'll just read that verse. It's Joshua 22. It says, Joshua 22, verse 24. We swear we have done this because we were worried that in the future, your descendants would say to our descendants, what relationship do you have with the Lord God of Israel? The Lord made the Jordan a boundary between us and you, Reubenites and Gadites. You have no right to worship the Lord. They're saying this is what they could say in the future about us. You have no right to worship the Lord, Adonai, right? In this way, your descendants might cause our descendants to stop obeying the Lord. And really, I think what that is referring to is not that we all have personal choice, you can obey whoever you want, but especially back then, the focus is you come to a place, you know, you're not let into the church, is basically like the Holy Sepulchre. You don't have a right to come in here. If you don't know, the Holy Sepulchre is where different denominations fight over all of that stuff. And the thing is it's everywhere among Christian denominations anyways, where, well, you know, you're like this and you're like this, and so we're not going to share. But Joshua 22 verse 26 says, so we decided to build this altar not for burnt offerings and sacrifices, but as a reminder.
And how did they fulfill their... How do they fulfill their commands if they have no temple and they are not going to offer burnt offerings?
Yeah.
Well,
they would have to do pilgrimage then, basically.
Because at this point they're going to Shiloh, yeah. Right? Shiloh is where the tabernacle is.
Yeah.
But it would become Jerusalem. And he says here specifically in verse 29, Joshua 22, verse 29, far be it from us to rebel against the Lord by turning back today from following after the Lord by building an altar mm-hmm. for burnt offerings, mm-hmm. sacrifices and tokens of peace or peace mm-hmm. offerings, aside from the altar of the Lord our God located in front of his dwelling place. It's a symbol.
It's crazy though how that happens. I mean, there are tribes on this side of the Jordan too, and they're divided by tribal divisions, and everyone's worried that just because there's a river there, there's a deeper geographical division, mm-hmm. and everyone knows that is going to be a problem. Just because there's a bigger valley or a bigger mountain, that's going to be a problem. It's going to cause future prejudice and enmity because of a greater distance due to a natural barrier. And it's true, that does actually happen. Like it's, and if you just look at it as a Martian.
And they said, well, if that land isn't good, you come back to God's own land.
Right.
So it's considered like you're outside of God's territory.
Yeah. Like if you're a Martian coming from Mars, you look at it and you think, how stupid. It's just a river. There's nothing different between any of you. It's just water flowing in between you. But like, it just shows how, you know, if you're different color skin, or you're in a different place, or you just said, we're going to call ourselves, you know, purple armbands, and you guys have green armbands, and then, you know, or this denomination and that denomination, and instantly enmity starts to creep in.
Spirit of competition.
And,
mm-hmm.
and it's
just crazy.
It's insane, but it just
see,
happens,
crazy.
And nothing you can do almost.
So, I just want to end with one more going on with what Danny was saying. There's one other interesting story that's connected to these tribes on this east side of the river. There is a judge in chapter 11, Judges 11, named Rephtah. Jephthah.
So this judge, and he's on the east side of the,
Sure. This is the last point. So, Yiftah, where is he from? Jephthah. He's from Yiftah.
My parents live on the corner of Bethlehem Road and Jephthah Street.
He's from Gilad. So remember we were talking about Yavesh, Gilad. Up here, so this is Gilad. So Yiftah, what's interesting about Yiftah? He's from Gilad, and his mother is a prostitute. And he gets involved in some wars with... He gets involved with some wars, some fighting, and just... We won't go into his whole story here, But like what Danny was talking about, the divisions, how the river starts to separate and people start to change. And it's just like living in neighborhoods even. You start to have lingo, or there's certain things that you know or whatever. And in chapter 12, Judges 12, it says that he goes and he fights the Ammonites. And in Judges 12:4, Jephthah assembled all the men of Gilead, and they fought with Ephraim. The men of Gilead defeated Ephraim because the Ephraimites insulted them, saying, "You Gileadites are refugees in Ephraim, living with Ephraim and Manasseh's territory." The Gileadites captured the fords of the Jordan River. Okay, so this is like where the altar is built, way back when, opposite Ephraim. Whenever an Ephraimite fugitive said, "Let me cross over," the men of Gilead would ask him, "Are you an Ephraimite?" If he said no, then they would say to him, "Shibolet." And if he said "Sibolet" and could not pronounce the word correctly, then they executed him right there at the river. So on that day, 42,000 Ephraimites fell dead. So it's just interesting right there. You see the language is changing depending on where you lived.
And more than that, it shows how actually there's almost nothing that they can see in any difference between them, except in how they pronounce a single
syllable.
Everything else about them is the absolute same. Yeah. And they got to go to this one little accent to see if they can find a difference.
Right.
That's because they're re-entering their land. They're threatening their... I mean, they expanded whatever they don't want anybody to do.
The dynamics are changing all the time. They're changing all the time. Like, you know, they think that God will protect them from these invading foreigners.
Well, that's what everybody's talking about today, right? Everybody's talking about invasion, or talking, you know, there's lines that are being drawn with nationalism and other stuff, and this is mainly tribalism. Like Danny's saying, they basically have everything in common, but they're kind of in a civil war or something like that.
Can I share my funny modern story?
Sure.
It's not totally connected, but in Kenya, we knew an Israeli embassy worker. What do you call it? Shabir? Not Shabir, but he was...
Ambassador?
Not the ambassador, but in
Israel.
Consulate. He, after his service in Nairobi, was reassigned to Jordan, which in the Bible, Ramat Amon is Amman.
Oh, yeah.
Jordan, right?
The capital today.
Yeah. His last name was Gilad. And so the people there had a problem. They thought Israel was making a statement of ownership because Gilad is here, right?
By sending Gilad.
So he had to change his name so that, or he had to explain it so that they... You know, knew it wasn't a political statement. You know, it was just...
To build a monument.
Yeah. So it's funny that even they knew the history and the name. I don't know if it's still Jalad or something.
Jalad, yeah. It's actually, the churches there go to Jalad a lot. There's a kind of all over the village. They have a site there where they all live.
So it's still, the name is preserved in Arabic, so they're aware that that area and his name.
Shabbat shalom.